Everyone talks about how great their business is, but the cornerstone to success is having a support system and being able to rely on your spouse or partner. Annette Delancey runs a company called She Makes Products. She Makes Products transforms overwhelmed female entrepreneurs who are struggling with lack of support into profitable businesses and confident CEOs. The foundation of your success is getting the support you need to get the success you want. So start today. Go to www.shemakesproducts.com/promotions and use the code MotorbikeMike to get 50% off Supportology, one of Annette's most popular courses for help with support issues. That's www.shemakesproducts.com/promotions and use the code MotorbikeMike to get 50% off Supportology. Don't let lack of support get in the way of your success. Everyone thinks about security for their home or vehicle, but how many think about cybersecurity for their business? Cybersecurity can be daunting and scary. We see the headlines every day. The stats are staggering. 88% of organizations worldwide experienced phishing attempts in 2019, and only 5% of companies properly secure and protect their sensitive information. Triada Networks provides cybersecurity and IT services to small businesses in the greater New York City area and investment firms worldwide. Triada Networks has put together an actionable and effective guide to help small business owners protect themselves from a business-killing cybersecurity event. Don't leave yourself vulnerable to the theft of sensitive information or vulnerable to a lawsuit from the theft of personal information. Visit www.smallbizsecurity.com to safeguard your business. That's www.smallbizsecurity.com.
Not having my hands dirty day to day and transitioning to this, there are times I feel like, man, do people think I'm being lazy? Because like they see me, like I usually keep my door open and sometimes I'm just staring out in space according to them because I'm thinking. I'm just thinking through stuff.
Last week we were talking about Gilligan's Island. I looked up Tina Louise, who played Ginger. She still is alive. She's 87.
Tina Louise, that's right.
She was a model, a professional model.
She was so statuesque. She really was gorgeous.
Yeah, she really was.
Why was Marianne the favorite, guys?
I don't know.
I don't know if I can answer that.
And have it still be a G-rated production.
I think, you know, Marianne was just her character. I bet you if you switch the characters, like if each actress plays the other one, I don't think you switch with the actress, but the character.
The character.
The apple pie girl. I think.
I gotcha.
The way Ginger was very like frou-frou, franc-franc. It's like a little bit like frustrating in that regard.
Gotcha.
That's my opinion. I don't know. What do you think, Jay Shlom?
Pigtails.
Pigtails did it for you?
Yeah.
I love it.
Pig hair.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. So today's interview is with John Briggs. John is a personal friend, started off as a colleague, and we just become friends over the years. Grew his practice to a now $3 million practice. He's in accounting and just built it on his own. Plus, he's the one who gifted me a Traeger. Jay Shlom, you know, we, the office, got you a Traeger.
Yeah, so I got to give one to somebody.
You poured the Traegers.
Pay it forward.
Yeah. So he came to my house. We had a Profit First or Profit Con event there. So all these Profit First members were there and we're talking. And John looks at my deck. He's like, oh, there's your grill. He's like, where's your smoker? And I'm like, what's a smoker? He's like, are you kidding me? And literally within the next week, there's an 18-wheeler backing down the driveway, dropping off. I'm like, what the hell's going on? We're like, oh, here's your package, sir. And it's this huge, same thing, Jeremy, this huge box. I couldn't handle it by myself. And there I am setting up a Traeger, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. First thing I'm going, oh, I didn't want this gift. And then I fire up the first meal on it. And my oldest son, who likes food, I see a tear coming down. He's like, this is the best hamburger. He's like, this is the best hamburger I've had in my life. And I'm telling you, there's something about a smoker.
You went from not knowing what a smoker was to making smoked apple pies.
I was going
to
say, you make pies in your smoker.
I'm doing some on it tonight. I'm going to do some red snapper on it. I did red snapper on it about 2-3 months ago. Full fish. Oh, oh.
That's the best. Full fish. Got to do the
whole fish. Krista doesn't like that, though. There's just the visual appeal. She'll eat the fish.
I'm impressed that you know how to serve it. You know, what do they call that? They fillet it, whatever. Whatever you do once it's at the table side and they debone it.
That. I didn't do any of that. It was the full fish.
Yeah, but you're going to have to do that.
No. You serve it that way, then you eat it. So what you do is you slice it so that the meat opens up a little bit, the flesh opens up, and then you cook it and you just plop it down.
Oh.
You ever go to like any of these Latin restaurants around?
Yeah. They do the full fish. Yeah. True.
No one's like a guy Roy down the street. What are you saying, Jason?
I was going to say, anything that you cook whole, it's going to taste better than if you cook the sum of its
parts.
So chicken whole is always going to taste better than just chicken by itself. Mm. Pieces of the chicken.
Mm. Why is that?
I don't know. I kind of do know. It has to do with like just it marinates in itself. Like,
oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you get like more flavors from like the bones and the rest of the parts of it kind of encapsulate that, and then it just adds to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And plus, whole fish is easier to cook than fillets. You can't grow
easy.
Like, no, they just fall apart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So easy to cook. Yeah. Right. Snapper is pretty flaky though. So even with the whole fish, I didn't put it on aluminum or something, maybe foil, which maybe I should have. I just put it on the grill because that's what it suggested.
I was going to ask if you did like a cedar plank kind of thing.
Peeling apart. I should have done something about that.
What I do is I just take, I have sheet pans, a perforated one, and you can just put on a perforated pan and then the smoke still permeates.
Oh, that's, yeah. Jeremy plays a whole different level.
Yeah. It brings it to a new level every time.
It's easy stuff.
I have a big question for Jeremy, but I want to save it for after the interview. So why don't we listen to John Briggs?
Okay.
And then we'll come back and I'll ask Jeremy the big question.
Sounds good.
You know how this podcast came about was you sent out. Do you even know what you sent out? Was
that I know because it's on my calendar. Team? So every quarter I have a reminder to reach out to the people who helped me launch my book because I want to give back as much as possible as a thank you for them who helped me when I, you know, they emailed their list about selling my book. So yeah, once a quarter. So I go to my marketing guy and say, hey, it's that time. I'd love to reach out to this list that we've compiled. I think you probably have a similar list. Because I'm talking to my marketing guy, so I got to make sure we are not selling anything. We are not asking for anything. I just want the email to be very simple and says, like, is there anything I can do to support you? And this is an idea.
Yeah.
Here's an idea. I'm happy to come talk to you or your group about anything tax or accounting related on me. Whatever you have already scheduled, I'm happy to just educate as an idea if you don't have anything. If you have another idea, let me know. And I probably got, I don't know, 10 responses.
So smart, man. It's so smart. And that's what caused this. Because like I read that and I called you. Or I texted you. I'm like, hey, dude, did you send this? Like, it was really well written. And you're like, yeah, but it's a marketing thing. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, no, it actually triggered an idea. I want you to come on my show. Talk about the growth of your business. But first, let's talk about your book. So you wrote Profit First for Micro Gyms, which is a derivative book. So the listeners of this podcast may not even know what the hell I'm talking about. So after writing Profit First, some people that are practitioners of Profit First through our organization, which is called Profit First Professionals, raised their hands saying, hey, we want to write a Profit First derivative book. Why, John, why were you one of those guys?
I wanted to do it, one, because every fitness professional that we took on as a client, we were already having to tweak the system to fit their needs.
You're already broken.
Because a lot of them, we were getting, they're like, hey, I read the book, or I've heard about it, and like I'm stuck, or I can't get past this part of the initial concept. Because they're not accountants, so they don't think through some of the options. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, I would look at my model compared to the model in your book. It's basically the same. We just change the vernacular, add a few things that they didn't know they were allowed to. It's like, you're allowed to do whatever you want. It's your business. But then the other reason was I did want to establish ourselves as the credible option. I believe that any fitness professional will get the best service from us. And so I might as well be the one where I'm trying to be top of mind for them so that we get the first chance to serve those clients, because I think we can do the best good for those fitness professionals. And writing the book seemed to be the best way to establish myself as a credible source. I think so. I mean, it's great. Even now, I guess we're 18 months past the book launch. We're still getting new testimonials on Amazon and reviews of like, this is a must read. I get a couple emails a month from readers. Cause you know, like in your book, you ask them to email you, like, give me your commitment. Tell me, for me, the commitment is, I want them to tell me they deserve to be profitable, because for gym owners, that was the biggest thing, because of the charitable element of what they do, helping people improve their health and their life. There's a charitable component there. And so because of that, sometimes these gym owners feel bad that they could make money off of doing such a good service. And so that's actually my core message to my readers in the book, is you deserve to be profitable. And in fact, if you want to keep doing this as a legacy, you have to be profitable. But so I ask them to email me, tell me why you deserve to be profitable. And so I get a few of those a month. And so, yeah, I think it's working. I feel like people talk about us.
Yeah, I know. I think it's working for sure. I'm super curious about this. I deserve to be profitable. You serve more than gyms. Do you notice this with all types of entrepreneurs, this struggle with, do I really deserve this? I have to be, of being of service is actually of being of sacrifice.
Not all entrepreneurs struggle with that thought. I think the industries that lend more towards the service that we do is benefiting a human being, I think they're the ones who struggle with it.
Oh, interesting. So if you are a therapist, like a mental health therapist.
Yeah, they're like struggling it.
If you have a fruit stand and you're selling fruit.
Now, that being said, even as accountants, you know, interacting with some of the profit first professionals over this last event we went to, there's definitely some of them that I can tell they struggle with this idea of deserving to be profitable. And I think maybe that comes just down from they're being paid to help someone with money who probably is in a situation where they're struggling with money. And so it's like, oh man, like, I'm going to help you get over this and I can, but you know, I think there's that element of, but it's like the Dave Ramsey approach with the I don't know what he calls them, endorsed local providers, right? It's like, so people who have massive amounts of debt who can't afford anything, they're reaching out to professionals to pay them to help them get out of debt, but they don't have the money to do that. So how do you balance?
It is a little bit of a conundrum. And I get that too. Some people will throw prop first at me. They say, Mike, I was considering your services or your company, but I'm not doing it because I'm doing profit first. And you told me not to use you.
Yeah.
And
I think there's a misunderstanding.
Right? So, yeah. I think some people feel that any cost is a bad cost, but I think people struggle to differentiate cost and investment. Like, what is a return? I dare say, was that our conversation you were talking about? Tell me if this is right, that every employee should have a return, or maybe that's Danielle.
Danielle, but I think an owner, you should be able to calculate what the return is on your team member. Yeah, but
even if they're like
administrative? The return you get is that they're likely freeing up time for the person who's generating the income, right? So it's not a monetary, like a direct, because you're supporting this person, now money's coming in. Because you're supporting this person, that person can now bring in more money.
Okay. So let's talk about your application of that in your firm. More than 30. Okay. More than 30. And that includes administrative actual tax practitioners. How do you measure the administrative people in freeing up time for the...
Well, so let me backtrack, because we used one of your clockworking tools to figure this out. Your little like hub and spoke diagram, where the idea you analyze all the tasks that you're doing on average on like a weekly or monthly basis, whatever. And then you draw a line to represent the length of that task in comparison to all the other ones. So we did that for accountants, and we found that 80% of these tasks they were doing weren't high level enough that they actually had to be involved in it. So like even simple things as entering information onto a payroll return or helping a client set up payroll accounts with the different states. I mean, gathering source docs, we had a whole list of things. It's like, I could hire an assistant and an assistant to support you, it's going to cost me $30,000 in cost, but I'm going to free up, say, 1,000 hours a year for you by doing this. Will you be able to bring in more than $30,000? And I would say you probably want to at least be double, right, to make it an investment. Because if they're just saving the person $30,000 as a company, you're not actually any further ahead, but you have more headache in managing more people. So you don't want the person to cover their own salary. Because like, could you bring in $60,000 more a year if you freed up 1,000 hours and you didn't have to do some of this other stuff? Absolutely, you could. So let's pull the trigger and let's do that.
Yeah. I love this. I love this. So when you do that hub and spoke, so the hub is the core task that your accounting professional has to do, right? Like prepare taxes. The spokes going off it are all the different things that are expected of them, at least currently, but distract them from doing that billable work. And so if someone, say an accountant bills $100 an hour, you know, maybe do projects, but you base it on that. If they spend 2 hours a week, this may not work out perfectly, doing that data entry, that costs $200. Exactly. Do I roughly have the...
And instead, I could hire someone at $20 an hour to save them those 2 hours. And even if that person's not efficient, and maybe it takes them 3 hours to do what the accountant took to do 2 hours, I still now have $60 of cost, but they've been freed up to take on more clients because they can now actually bill that work out. Because there's some tasks, I might have a $250, $350 an hour rate, but not all your tasks you do, you can, bill at that rate, right? So,
right, of course,
freeing up time so that you can do the activities that actually allow you to generate the highest revenue return has really worked out pretty good for us. And it actually makes our accountants have a much better like stress level as well, because guess what? They suck at that administration stuff anyways. So why not hire someone who's already passionate about it, who enjoys to do it, take it off their plate, frees up time so they can do more of the stuff that they love to do. So, I mean, it really worked out great across the board.
Yeah, it seems like it's a reward for the accountant. Like, someone's basically your personal assistant taking care of this nonsense, and I'm doing air quotes around nonsense stuff.
Totally necessary.
Because it is nonsense. It's necessary.
They're not the best person to do it anyways.
Yeah. Is there a time when we can go too far? I'll give an example. For me, when I travel, I have Aaron, who's my personal assistant, call ahead to the auto reservation, the hotel that same day to say, hey, confirming Mike's flying in, want to make sure the room is ready. Just on the rare occasion, it does happen that, oh, we got rid of that rental car, and then she can make arrangements proactively. It's only a few minutes of her time. Technically, it'd only be a few minutes of my time. And I know where I am at what time. It's just as easy for me to do it. So I'm wondering, is there a point where it's excessive that someone else is doing it? Because that during the time I'm talking, I'm writing another book. It's just a couple of minutes. Is there a trade-off point or reverse?
I wonder if the trade-off point is more of a way we start to respond and change our behaviors as people versus the dollar amount to time comparison. Because like, I would say if I have an accountant who now is like, I have an assistant and they do all of these things for me, I don't even touch that anymore because I'm so good. I'm too good. It's like someone is reaching to the point because they have assistants that they've reached that state of being, that's in my mind too far.
Yeah.
Like, let's still be human. Yeah. And yes, I have an assistant, but for sure, if it's going to take me 2 minutes to do something that is going to take her 2 minutes, but actually is going to take me longer to say, hey, can you go ahead and do this? Why not just do it? Right.
Yeah. Maybe. I like that point. Is some people like, oh, I'm too good for this work. I read a book that's pretty popular and I think it's a bad book because there's one story in there where this person who's the owner of a company says the problem with companies are not just systems, but holding people accountable to systems. I'm like, okay, I get that. He says, I walked through the lobby one day and there was garbage on the floor. So I immediately called the janitor and said, why is there garbage on the floor? And then said, what is my problem as the owner of this business? How am I failing you in explaining how this room needs to be clean? And so what this author is trying to teach is a form of accountability, but the way at least I read it, and this could just be my own interpretation, it was so condescending. It was why my interpretation is, why don't you just pick up the garbage owner, throw it out, and then if you see it happen again, next time call and say, hey, I threw out the garbage last time, I did it again. Are we not cleaning this up frequently enough? What are your ideas? You know, so it seems like there's this wall between I'm too good for this. I'm not touching that garbage. Not my job. Versus just what best serves the business.
And I don't know what that line is, but I feel like that's the, in my mind, that's the distinction I'm trying to live by. Like, yeah, it's nice to have an assistant. It's nice to have someone who can do some of these things for me. But at the same time, while I have an assistant who gathers source docs for me, for my clients, she reaches out to them. If I'm working on a tax return and I need something, I'm going to email my client. Like, hey, I need this. I'm not going to email my assistant to then email my client because it's beneath me. I just think that attitude of anything being beneath you is something that as owners, we need to be careful of because I do think that's a negative energy that seeps into your culture and you don't want it in the long run. Because guess what? If you feel that way, your managers are going to start feeling that way. And that's going to start cranking down to your lower level, entry level positions. And now you're going to, from day one, you've hired a bunch of entitled people. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how many hours we're working. Dude, it's day two. This is your second day on the job. You don't even know enough about anything to be complaining about hours being worked.
Right. Right. You know, it's true. There's that entitlement, right? And it starts from the chief down. I remember I was working with a hedge fund. It was one of my clients back yesteryear. And the managing partner, you know, massive office. He was never there. And always had the most cutting edge equipment. So he would spend literally tens of thousands of dollars to set up his computer system. It was that high end. The traders, the brokers had the hand-me-downs and the rundown stuff. So he was paying $500 to $1,000 for their setups. The funny thing was he had the best tool for him just out of ego, but it was of no service. He wasn't even there, but he wanted to serve himself. And the brokers who was making him the money was getting the poor tools. So I see that happen. Your business culture though is different. You if I remember your story, John, you started your business just because, hey, I need to make money for my family, myself. And now fast forward to today, you got over 30 employees. Yeah. You're doing, can I share the revenue? Over $10 million. I'm kidding. Over $3 million. That's an inside joke that we played on Ron here at the office, but over $3 million in revenue. Tell me about this trajectory. What were the stages you went through? How did you manage the business?
First of all, every stage is different. And just because you get past one stage doesn't mean the next stage isn't going to be different or harder or right. It's like, oh, I figured out how to hire. So in fact, even with the Profit First group, I think 3 years ago, I did a presentation on my hiring process. And at the time, it worked out great and it was working for us. But honestly, we've completely revamped it now, even since then. I started the business out of a necessity to survive and to just be a provider for my family. And then my inability to say no led to the need to hire more people because clients would say, hey, can you also do my stuff? You bet I can. Yeah, it's like, no, I don't have time for this.
You're right.
And so then you hire somebody and they help and you realize, wow, I didn't give them very clear instructions and that's why they're failing. Not because having team members is hard. It is, but a lot of times it's hard because we didn't put the work in as an owner to give them the right system and support to be successful. And it's taken me many, many, many hires to figure that out. But so in the beginning, I'd hire someone, maybe I'd hire two, one of them didn't work out. And so you kind of do this back and forth seesaw of employees. And I feel like I see a lot of business owners when they're in that point of like 5 to 10 team members, some become so frustrated with it that they're like, you know what? I'm just going to go back and be a solopreneur. I'm just going to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. And look, I'm not saying that's not a bad choice if you choose to have a lifestyle business where it's just you, maybe some outsourced help. But I hope that people are doing that because that's their conscious choice, not because they're running away from the hard work of training team members. I think those are two different state of minds and state of beings. And one, I think, leads to a happier life. And the other one, you're going to just feel like you ran away eventually. And you're going to be like, you're going to feel like you let yourself down. Because ultimately, I think as a business owner, part of my responsibility is to provide jobs and give people a great environment where they enjoy work enough, but can also enjoy their family life. And because we've been able to pull it off, I am very excited and passionate about to be able to continue to grow this so that I can give that chance to more people. Because in my industry, the traditional accounting firms, the big four, man, these guys, they really work their accountants hardcore. And
oh my gosh. Right. You got to get in your
2,500 actually is the minimum hours. that their salary is based
on. Is it 2,500?
Yeah. And it's like, you're working 78 hours a week, 6 months out of the year, at like best case scenario. When you have time to spend with your family or to create a family, to do fun things and build memories outside of the walls of the office. Like, so I kind of feel like it's my right or my responsibility, I should say, to give people a chance to work in an accounting field that also supports life outside of work.
Yeah. And so your business, did you hit that threshold, the 5 to 10 people where you're like, oh my gosh, my job's changed from doing tax work to now managing people, trying to make their job easier. I'd rather go back to the way it was.
I mean, honestly, that compulsion. Mike, there are times now, even now, I'm like, man, we're just going to sell the whole thing. You know, we have those moments, right? It's like,
no, me too.
Why are you as an adult responding this way? You know, it's like, how come I never thought I'd have some conversations that I have with adults, the way I speak to my four children, all of which are under the age of 13, but sometimes we have similar conversations. No, I definitely got to that point. And I would say, I feel like between years 2 and 4, we were kind of stuck in this 7 to 12 range of team members, because I was trying to make that transition and I didn't know how to do it. Like, man, I'm bringing revenue over here as the accountant, but now I have a full-time job over here running the business and creating systems. But if I get rid of my tax work, someone else is going to need to be paid to do that. And how am I going to be able to afford this? And, oh, it looks like this team member is not going to work out. Because once again, and this is, I can say in hindsight, I didn't quite have this attitude in the beginning. In hindsight, I realized I failed them as the owner because I didn't give them the keys of success to show them, this is how you progress. This is what I need you to do to win. Instead, in the moment, it's like, I don't understand why you suck. Why can't you get work done? You know,
right.
Hey, you know, after 6 months of working with you on this, it's just not going to work. You don't seem to be able to get it. When really I could have given a clearer picture of what I needed them to do and a better training program to give them the opportunity to succeed.
That's a classic trap. So I'm curious how you got out of this. So if you stop doing the work, you're not making enough money for yourself anymore because you had to hire that person. So it means your income is going to go down some degree. So, but if you don't start focusing more on giving systems, your people are going to be lost wandering around.
I started with the thing that was taking the most time off my plate and I hired that first. And so I just had to do it in steps because I couldn't afford to do it all at once. I didn't have an investor behind me. I'm not a tech company where I can just go from valuation to valuation and more fundraising, even though I'm never profitable. Yeah, no, we actually had to be profitable. and so, yeah, for me, it was the tax manager role. I needed someone to review all the other team members' work instead of me doing that on top of preparing my own client stuff, and on top of running the business. I'm like, out of all these things, reviewing tax returns and training team members is taking a gigantic chunk of my time. So let's hire that first.
Okay. Is this a full-time person?
For me, it was full-time. But for sure, if I'm starting off and I had more insight to it, than I did back then, I could have started off. I probably still would have hired a full-time person because I feel like it's been my experience in the accounting industry. The full-time people we've hired have been a little bit higher quality than those that are just working for part-time. Now, it's not to say people who only want to work part-time hours can't be high quality. I think I wanted them in-house. I think there's a whole group of basically like CPA moms that are out there who decided to stay home and be a mom instead of pursuing their career. I think they would be awesome to hire. At the time, I didn't have the capability to work remotely. So anyways, I'm not trying to demean anyone who's on the other side of the scale there. But so for me, I would have done it as a full-time job, but probably just here are part-time hours to review tax work. And then on the other hours, I'm going to need to do just be a normal accountant and, you know, bring in revenue.
Yeah. I gotcha. So when you made that shift, I presume there's a sense of anxiety too, because now you're giving up control over the quality of your work, maybe in its entirety. How do you navigate?
There was that for sure. There was that. I don't know how you navigate it other than you just had to deal with it. Like I had to accept that in order for the business to go where I wanted to go, to provide more wonderful job opportunities to people, to help taxpayers, to grow all this, mm-hmm. I just had to get over myself. Cause ultimately I think it was my ego. It's like, that's really what was telling me, you know, you should be anxious because they're not you. Are they going to be able to do it as good as you? Are they going to do it just like you? No, they're not going to do it just like me. And that's fine. It doesn't mean they're doing it badly. In fact, I mean, our current tax manager, she's doing it better than I would. She has more patience than I do.
Yeah.
And so like you find people who are better at it than you are anyway. So then you for sure are happy about it. But yeah, I think ultimately it was my ego that I just had to get over giving up that control.
Everyone talks about how great their business is, but the cornerstone to success is having a support system and being able to rely on your spouse or partner. Annette Delancey runs a company called She Makes Products. She Makes Products transforms overwhelmed female entrepreneurs who are struggling with lack of support into profitable businesses and confident CEOs. The foundation for your success is getting the support you need to get the success you want. So start today. Go to www.shemakesproducts.com/promotions and use the code MOTORBIKEMIKE to get 50% off Supportology, one of Annette's most popular courses for help with support issues. That's www.shemakesproducts.com/promotions and use the code MOTORBIKEMIKE to get 50% off Supportology. Don't let lack of support get in the way of your success. Everyone thinks about security for their home or vehicle, but how many think about cybersecurity for their business? Cybersecurity can be daunting and scary. We see the headlines every day. The stats are staggering. 88% of organizations worldwide experienced phishing attempts in 2019, and only 5% of companies properly secure and protect their sensitive information. Triada Networks provides cybersecurity and IT services to small businesses in the greater New York City area and investment firms worldwide. Triada Networks has put together an actionable and effective guide to help small business owners protect themselves from a business-killing cybersecurity event. Don't leave yourself vulnerable to the theft of sensitive information or vulnerable to a lawsuit from the theft of personal information. Visit www.smallbizsecurity.com to safeguard your business. That's www.smallbizsecurity.com.
Then you start giving up that control. You over time, given up more control. What are you moving toward? Now you have a 30-person company.
So I just reassigned all my clients. I have 23 clients that I'm going to keep that I'm going to work on. And that's a personal choice because I enjoy it. I enjoy meeting with these clients.
Okay.
I like it. It doesn't feel like work. So I'm going to do that, but then the rest of the time is going to be, I meet with all of my leadership team once a week. We also have a leadership meeting. We have a team meeting that I primarily provide the training ideas for, and I still want to do that. So that's kind of where I'm moving, is more the training role of people so that, I can kind of duplicate the way I feel like, I've found clients want their accounting services to be delivered. And then of course, working on the business and working on systems and then working with my team. It's like, for example, my biggest current project that I'm working on right now is creating a very clear career roadmap for accountants, almost gamifying it, where I've identified the competencies that I feel like the position should have. And like, as a level one, say intern entry level position, these competencies will look like these different things so that they can clearly see where they are. The next level looks like this. And with the next level is a pay raise. And the next level looks like this. And so they can very clear path all the way up to our, the pinnacle position that we have for accountants where they have ultimate.
It's called John.
Where they buy me out. And, yeah. Where they have ultimate flexibility. They set their own schedule. They even set their own prices if they don't, if they want to charge more than what we charge, that type of stuff. But that's the current thing that I'm working on. And it needs time. Like, that's a gigantic project. And just to outline it,
yeah,
I'm probably only going to get 75% of the way there with one outline. And then I got to meet with my team members because they're the ones with boots on the ground and they can help me see which spots we need, or we can clarify certain levels and competencies and what those look like. And then from there, we got to actually build out the system. And so I'm going to treat this as if some company, like if I'm trying to get my clients to say be profit first professionals, I'm going to go to profit first professionals. I'm going to pay the fee and then we're going to follow the process that gets them certified. It, we're going to create our own like internal certification program where they're going to, so we need the back end, like a Kajabi where they log in and they can track where they're at and what are the homeworks and what are the quizzes. So we make sure that they actually are learning what they need to learn. But that's a gigantic project. It's a full-time job. And that's really what I need to be spending time on.
Yeah. Those projects are massive because there's so much thought, so much caloric burn in the brain, just figuring stuff out and then putting all those pieces together. Yeah. And to me, that's also stuff that has to go undistracted. Sure. You can't like say, oh, the first 10 minutes of the morning, I'll start it. And then I'll spend an hour in the afternoon and then come back to it for 20 minutes. It's got to be contiguous time. Sometimes a full day or two.
Close the door. Just thinking. Deep work. As that book Deep Work talks about. Yeah, exactly. You can't. No distractions on those.
COVID. When the pandemic hit, did you go remote?
We did go remote for about 6 weeks, and then most people started trickling back to the office, kind of as a natural thing on their own accord. We didn't necessarily make an official announcement or anything.
Is that really drives in the court? I have a niece.
I will say though, so we're currently in two separate spaces, about 2,000 square feet, and I don't like it. I didn't like it when I had to do it. But just closed on a commercial property where we can all now be under the same roof. But we're in that process, and as annoying as it is, I'd rather not ever have to move again. And since we have the capability to work remotely, we are very interested in adding team members remotely now. I feel like we have a good combination of that as far as like building the internal culture, which can then translate to people when they choose to work remotely. And then it frees up the space so that I don't need to move again and get more square footage.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Before we wrap up, my last question for you is around the folks that got you here, maybe aren't the folks that get you there. So I'm just curious, your team of 5-10 people, when you went through that transitional phase, now you're 30, are those original people there? How did that play out?
Yes, that's so true. And also another stat, I feel like it probably takes 3 or 4 hires for the position before you find the right fit, because it's not just necessarily the right person, but you figuring out what exactly you want the position to do. Because every time we grow, like, and we're hiring for a different thing, it's a new position. We've never had it in our company before. We're not entirely sure what it should look like. And we're trying to not be a traditional firm. So it's like, well, this is what we think it should do. I'm thinking probably 30% are still with us. So we definitely had turnover.
Okay. And those people that leave or left, at least what I experienced in my early companies is that they were almost that entitlement mentality. I don't even know if that's the word, but they were in there from the beginning. They knew how it started. They had all these roles to serve. As we're growing,
the roles become more narrow, and they couldn't accept that. And I get it. I had to then invite them, say, hey, listen, you got to find your spot somewhere else because we have to grow and we can't, you can't be doing everything.
All the totally. Because when you're smaller, every team member is likely doing a variety of positions. And as you grow, it's like, okay,
right.
I can bring someone in for this. Bob is really good at XYZ. Let's let him grow XYZ when maybe Bob's like, but I like ABC. Yeah, Bob, but you're not good.
Right,
you're not as good at it, at least, as XYZ, you know? So there's that. And then I think also I noticed, at least with my own progression, because I'm not, maybe you'll disagree, but I don't feel like I'm a flamboyant person or one of these personalities that can get on a stage like a Tony Robbins and just like, I'm not a motivator in that regard. And so in the beginning as a small business owner, I gave a lot of flexibility and I wasn't good at holding people truly accountable to what I was paying them to do. I let things slide because I wanted to avoid the conflict of having the meeting with them to say, hey, you need to be better at this. And I've slowly developed that ability, realizing I'm not being rude or mean by telling them the truth and giving them guidance. In fact, most of your team members want it. I just wasn't comfortable giving it. And so as we grow and people start being held more accountable, some of them just didn't like it. It's like, oh, you're actually going to make me do now what you are paying me to do. I'm out. And so we have had people self-select out because the job got harder in the sense that I was now requiring them to actually do all of what I was paying them to do.
Let me actually end on this question. What about yourself? Do you think you may ever... You may be the person who runs himself out of a job. Maybe that's
I don't think
design.
There'd be anything wrong with that. I mean, I've run myself hopefully out of a job of needing to be the accountant. There's also other love. Like I ran myself out of the job of being the marketing person. Now we have like three people in our marketing team. I ran myself out of the job of being the HR person. I think as we grow, that's the benefit of being the owners. I want to grow myself into the things that allow me to think the most clearly, that allow the business to grow and prosper to its best ability. And as you grow, that becomes more visionary and more thought provoking and less actual, like doing the day-to-day nitty gritty stuff, which has been hard for me as a person who just, I'm an accountant by trade. So not having my hands dirty day-to-day and transitioning to this, there are times I feel like, man, do people think I'm being lazy? Because like they see me, like I usually keep my door open and sometimes I'm just staring out in space according to them because I'm thinking. I'm just thinking through stuff. And
right.
I'm not actually... No.
Well, is that according to them or you think?
Because we did Darren Viramasani's 34 Strong stuff, which is awesome. If no one's done that, it's super awesome. Yeah. I'm an awesome internal processor. I have to think things through. And so when he...
While playing Tetris.
No, was it Farmersville? What? I don't know what those are. When Darren told the whole team this, he's like, John's he needs to think through things to process it. And then everyone's like, oh, that's why it always looks like he's just staring off in the space. I'm like, oh, great, guys. Yeah.
He's actually working. That's funny. John Briggs, founder of Insight Tax.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much for joining me today. Here's the big question, Jay Sloan. We are going on our retreat. Amy booked us two nights, 3 days in your neck of the woods. Getting towards you, at least in New Hope, Pennsylvania.
New Hope. Yeah.
What are you cooking? What are you cooking? Because that's the whole reason the company put out another $2,000 just to get that place.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you could cook.
So it's going to be October, right?
Yeah, October. Yep. Late October. Okay.
So, I mean, what's my rule of thumb? You should know this by now.
Well, fall. It's going to be pumpkin something.
Yeah, it was just seasonal. Just seasonal.
Seasonal.
Whatever's in season when we go, I'll base the menu off of that.
Thanksgiving, a pre or
that would be fun.
We all dress up like pilgrims.
Okay, you brought it to a level I wasn't expecting. But
I will say one of my favorite fall dishes is duck.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever had duck?
I've had duck. I mean, I've had kind of fancy smancy places, but I wouldn't go out of my way.
You know what? I actually, if I might be able to get it done by then. I was thinking about building a little transport for the Traeg to hook up to the back of the Jeep.
Oh, dude, your Jeep!
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Yeah, forget the automaton wheel. Build that. Yeah.
Yeah, and then it'll be smoked everything. Everything will be smoked. Everything won't have smoke.
Not smoked yet. Coffee in the morning.
Yeah, there you go.
You ever have smoked stuff, Amy?
Smoked stuff? Yes. Chris has a green egg, and you can smoke on that. Yeah. But I don't know that it smokes to the level of a Traeger, which is like built for smoking. This is like
eggs are phenomenal.
Yeah, the green egg is pretty cool. Yeah. It has like the different convection shields and stuff like that in there, and it's fancy. I don't know how to do it. I can't like go out and make myself a burger or a dog on it though, because it's a process. Everything looks like it's like the 100% natural lump charcoal only goes in there, and then like so you have to build the fire just right, and then.
So I have an idea that could possibly revolutionize grilling. And I don't want to share it on the air because I think Mike and I could put our heads together and really make this happen.
Then save it, dude.
No, don't save it. Did you say it or save it?
Save it. I think the green egg holds heat better, which is essential to proper smoking. However, it's charcoal.
Yeah.
Which is a whole another pain in the neck because you can't control the heat as well, even though it's insulated better than like the Traeger. With the Traeger, you know, it fluctuates a lot when you open it up, but you can set it and have it at the right temperature.
Yeah.
All right. He's
I'll share offline. I'll share
offline. Share it. Maybe there's something to.
I want to be in on this. I want to hear about it.
When?
Yeah, I'll tell you soon. I'm recording. I'll tell you.
Okay.
You're an investor.
Yeah, maybe I could be an investor.
All right. So let's talk about the interview.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Or we can just talk about smoking food for the rest of the.
John was horrible. He ruined everything. I thought it was interesting. In that he clearly has lived the arc of entrepreneurship. Like he went into it because he needed money, but there wasn't a plan really beyond I got to make money.
Yeah.
But very quickly he became sophisticated, and now you know he's not doing any of the work.
Yeah.
So
great.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Following the plan exactly.
Yeah.
It's really great. I thought it was interesting when he said that. He has to teach people to, especially those who are in the service industries, that it's okay to be profitable. That was interesting. And now that I think about it, makes a lot of sense that those would be the people who would have a problem with believing that they deserve to be profitable. And I love that you guys have both said that, yeah, you have to be profitable. It's your duty to be profitable so that you can serve people in all the ways that you want to serve them.
I wish more people lived by that. Mm-hmm. I wish more people lived by that. It because it's the sacrifice, and there's a sense of nobility. Like, oh, if I give and serve someone else to my own compromise, that's what's noble. But I think that's actually the most shameful thing because there's no ability to perpetuate that. You know, you give once and you're done because you've exhausted yourself financially or otherwise.
Right.
You can never give again.
Right.
I think. You know, one thing that people need to keep in mind is, you know, if they feel bad about, you know, making money, and it's like, but it's a means to an end. So if you want to do something, you know, good and give back, that's how you get there. So you shouldn't feel bad about it because it's just going to get you to that point where you can then have the means to be able to do all of those things that you want to do. You know, in the end.
Yeah.
There was something being a fearless, like just keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, who was it that we interviewed who did weddings? And she wasn't charging enough.
Oh,
and
then I remember that.
She started charging more and doing
way back, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was about a year ago.
That was on Mike in Your Business.
Yeah. I think it was.
Back to Entrepreneurship Elevated.
Mm,
it might have been entrepreneurship.
It might have been, actually, now that you say that.
Yeah. But so she was doing all this work and she wasn't charging enough. And then she's like, I can't live this way.
Yeah. Yeah. She was in the first or second interview. I think maybe it was Mike Up in Your Business, but right in the beginning.
Yeah. I'll have to find out, and then I'll put a little link up for everybody who's
at that point. And I don't now recall if John said this specifically, but their point is what you charge and what people are willing to pay is how they value you. So if you don't charge much, people aren't paying much, which means people don't see much value in you. You're the penny gumball. You just twist the dial. If one falls on the floor, screw it. I got a penny. It's disposable. But you be the $25,000 diamond ring. Like if you turn $25,000, that ring better fall in my hands and I'm going to care for that. You know, I've been saying this recently, the most overlooked yet important piece of marketing that any business does is the price. And people don't consider that. It's a marketing piece. It is the most representative of your quality before someone has experience with you. And so, did you find the person name?
I saw a bunch of names that it could be. I don't remember. Was it Melanie Daziel or...
That sounds like it. Yeah, Melanie.
Melanie the right? Or there was also Crystal Stacy. It might have been Crystal Stacy.
I think it's Crystal Stacy. I remember it was like Krista, so it must be Crystal.
All right.
There you go.
Yeah. Amy, all right, let's rock and roll. We want to know what you heard, by the way, our listener friends. So if you would go to rateourpodcast.com, tell us what you think of the show. You know, we're having an informal conversation. We want you to learn a little about what we're doing here, too. But we want to know what you learned from the show. We'd be really honored if you rate the show. So rateourpodcast.com. It takes less than a minute and it'll serve us. And I also want to invite you to subscribe when you're there.
Yes. And I will invite you as well to check out our YouTube channel and subscribe because we have very delicious content. Smoking. Yeah,
Jeremy's pushing us to do some new cool stuff. So you
got some grilling videos on there.
No. Yeah, that's right. No.
He's like, no.
No, let's somehow incorporate entrepreneurship, accounting, profit first, and grilling.
There we go.
Yeah. I love it.
All right. So this one, I gotta say, normally I can figure out a way to relate the quiz with the guest, but John Briggs specifically in the question where we said, "What is unique about you, or what hobbies do you have?" He said, "None."
He's such a tool.
Oh, that man. I am unique, and that I am not unique. Wasn't that the right?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, come on. So, okay, this is a stretch. So, this trivia is: are you familiar with Briggs and Stratton engines?
No.
Yeah, this is Briggs and Stratton trivia. The company Briggs
and Stratton, and they make engines for what, cars or?
Well, you're gonna find out.
Oh, I love it.
No, so right now they make engines for residential, like lawnmowers, and okay. They're very popular with lawnmowers and stuff like that.
Mm. Okay, Mike, are you Googling right now?
Oh no!
You look like you're Googling.
No, I cut over to because I saw something that I thought came from John Briggs, but it wasn't. It was someone
else. Okay,
John Briggs. That is perfect.
John's Briggs Bridges.
Okay, question one. So founded in 1908, Briggs & Stratton created the Model F engine, which was one of the first examples of an engine with what? Is it A, an overhead cam, B, an overhead exhaust port, or C, overhead valves?
What year is this?
1908.
Yep. Big year.
All right, question two, we're moving into the 20s. In the 1920s, in addition to making parts for bicycles and automobiles, mainly starters, the company also grew with its manufacturing parts for what? Was it A, air conditioners, B, washing machines, or C, sewing machines?
Okay.
And now this could be the toughest question or the easiest one. I don't know. It depends on your knowledge of engines. In 1953, the company revolutionized the small consumer use engine, which was previously made from cast iron, with what metal? Is it A, steel, B, aluminum, or C, titanium?
Okay. I'm trying to use the Jeremy Hack system again.
Okay, yeah, let me know how that works. And then someday fill me in on it.
you get them, you have to tell me what this is because
if I do get it.
All right. So question one, founded in 1908, they created the Model F engine, which was one of the first examples of an engine with what?
I said overhead exhaust.
I put overhead valves.
Oh, Mike, overhead valves.
I used the Jeremy system on that one.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
I believe from my research, they did have an engine with an overhead cam at that point, but they didn't have one with overhead valves. Okay, question two. In the 1920s, in addition to making parts for bicycles and automobiles, the company also grew its manufacturing for parts with what? Was it air conditioners, washing machines, or sewing machines?
Washing machines.
Washing machines.
Yes, washing machines. Look at you, two for two.
In the Jeremy system.
Oh, really? It's working?
It improves your odds. It doesn't nail all the time, but it improves the odds.
Know what this is because I
no Jeremy, way. Do you have a system? Tell
no,
me.
No, there's a little.
Mike's doing this thing where he's like, oh, the order that he puts. No,
you can narrow it down to one of two choices. Like you can usually rule out one. It's a rule out as opposed to rule in.
All right.
Okay. All right. We'll see how you do on this one.
So I'm 50-50 on this next one.
All right. 1953, the company revolutionized a small consumer use engine previously made from cast iron with what metal? Was it steel, aluminum, or titanium?
So aluminum's what I'm going to go with, but can I give you the backup? It's one of these. Yeah. Titanium would be my backup.
I went with titanium first.
It's aluminum. Look at that.
Three aluminum is strong enough? I didn't think it was strong enough.
Yeah, so aluminum is – the strength to weight ratio for aluminum is like very, very high. So aluminum's used in a lot of engine parts.
It's cheap. It's freely available. Oh. Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah, it's easier to manufacture. It's cheaper.
Ah,
That was the first. I think they made the entire head and everything out of aluminum, where most of the time it's you can't do that. Like my Jeep engine is made out of cast iron, and the thing's like, 500 pounds.
Oh.
It's pretty wild. Cool. But yeah, now they use aluminum for tons of parts.
That's so cool. Very cool.
Three for three, baby.
Very well done, Mike. Very well done. This was your week.
So, Jeremy, I'll tell you the hack now after these weeks of buildup. You rarely, almost actually never have choice A be the option. I can't actually think of one instance where A was the option. So
get out of here.
Yeah, swear to God. Go back through your list. It's B or C, and I would say it's 60% C, 40% A. I am B. So it's B you use less. You see the most often. And I realized that when you have me – I was like, when you had me do the questions for those people for the sponsor thing, and you gave me questions advanced, I'm like, oh, it's always B or C. There's never an A.
Okay, so now here's what I think your methodology is. You're telling me this. So now I'm going to overcome
to A. Oh, A. You're going to pop them into the A slot.
Here's what if I can be so bold to mansplain the suggestion.
Yeah, yeah.
I would go on Google and just do a 1, 2, 3 random number generator. So it tells you which one to put as the right answer. And then
you cover it. No, and I'm just going to roll a die.
Roll a die. Yeah. And then
whatever.
Exactly. And then you'll get out of that propensity.
Oh, man, you got me.
Oh, yeah. But look, it's funny. I didn't notice until I was reading those. I was like, holy shit, it's always B or C. Always.
You're so good. Well, you can pick up on patterns. I never pick up on patterns.
It's funny that you said that because I'm wondering as you're going through the trivia, like luckily nobody picked up on it while you're doing it.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Oh, no one. Oh, on the thing. No. No one picked up on that.
They're like, I listened to the show. I know that he never.
I know it. It's always B or C, and it's a 60% chance it's C.
Oh, that's good.
All right, my friend. Are we done for today? I guess we are.
Yeah.
All right. So just as a reminder. Go to rateourpodcast.com to subscribe and rate the show. Send any questions you have to ask Mike at mikemikalowicz.com. And yeah, we have a YouTube channel. It's Mike Mikalowicz. You can Google, go YouTube, Mike Mikalowicz. Give your best spelling at Mikalowicz possible. And check it out. Jeremy's creating some cool stuff. I mean, I'm the one doing the videos, but Jeremy's the one who actually puts it together.
You're actually creating it.
I'm the creator. Jeremy is the masher-upper, though. That's where magic happens.
Coming up next week, we have Mike on the grill.
Wow. Is that fish you're cooking on there? All right.
All right. We're good.
All right. Wishing you good times.
Wishing you good times.